The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Welcome back to Dory's Big Show. This is Dory's friend Brandy Cruz filling. Dory's under the weather today. So I got a last-minute call from Nicole. I was driving downtown Seattle. She's like, come fill in. After she'd completely exhausted any other possible fill-in,
that's
she
not
called
true.
Me. And I can't say no to you, and I can't say no to Dory, so we hope Dory feels better soon. And it's been great to fill in. And I could not have chosen. I didn't choose. I guess I didn't choose this. I could not have lucked into filling in on a better day. Let's get right to the big lead.
The big lead. Top story.
So as many of you might know, or maybe you don't, I used to work here. It's been about 7 years, but this is where I started my news career. Way back when I was 21 years old and I did reporting on the talk shows, and that's when I found out, you know, how much of blowhards people in radio can be. Just true narcissists
here,
and
here.
Huge egos. With the exception of Tom Tangney. Truly, Tom just has, and I think I was reading in your goodbye, the goodbye email, how you light up a room and you've just got this great big smile. I'm going to tell a story in a little bit about this really kind thing you did for me at a moment where it really mattered that you might not have known it. But today is Tom's final day at Cairo Radio after 27 years.
Yeah, plus. Yeah. Wow. It's an amazing experience to go through. You know, in this business, it's hard to stay in any one place for very long. Mm-hmm. If you last 2 or 3 years, you know, you feel like, okay, good, I'm ready for my next gig. The fact that I've been able to fashion a career in what I always considered a dying profession. I swear, when the day I was born, radio was already on its last legs. They thought, and yet here we are. It's been the most unbelievable career for me. It's just, in 3 decades, I've managed to do practically anything and everything that... All the opportunities that I've had to experience by working at Cairo have sort of come true. It's been amazing. And I didn't even dream. I was like you, and I still am sort of. I never wanted to be a talk show host.
Yeah.
That had no appeal. I feel like my roots are in the newsroom. To me, my ideal job was to be the afternoon drive time. We had 4-hour news block. We've now replaced that with something called the Tom and Curly Show. I don't know what gives, but still. To run the news department from that vantage point and to be able to, I always thought of myself, I never wanted to be a reporter. Reporters to me are like actors. I want to be the director. So if I'm sitting at the news desk and I'm directing, okay, Brandy, you go here, you know, or Ursula, you go there, that I was creating this work of art, this 4-hour work of art that no one else saw it that way, but I did. And I love that kind of control. And I never even listened to the talk shows because they're like blowhards. That's exactly what I thought.
All of them. So all these years and all the things you've done, you know, from being on the assignment desk to reviewing movies, to being now, you know, a co-host on a talk show, is there one job that you liked the most?
Okay, now I'll tell you one thing right off the bat. By far the easiest job is to be the talk show host. Not even close.
Oh, that's funny.
I mean, and the thing is, it might have something to do with one's personality. I think if you're a natural introvert, being a talk show host is not easy. But this is, to me, what's amazing about basically I've been here for 3 decades. And in the last decade, I've been doing talk shows for the last 10 years or so. And it came absolutely natural to me because, in fact, somebody mentioned this when they first were suggesting it. Says, Tom, you don't stop talking in the newsroom anyway. Why don't we just put your microphone in front of you and capture that? I always have things to say. I always had things to say. I just never wanted, in fact, I look at what a guy like Dory does, and I can't imagine. I get bored with my own opinion. As right as I think I am, I can't imagine talking for 3 hours a day just about my opinion. John Tom and Curly Show is perfect for me because I love a conversation. I think conversation is an art form that is really underutilized and underappreciated. I really think the best conversations are as good as any art form you can. And basically, John and I, now we argue a lot, but it's still a conversation of sorts. And that's what brings out the best, I think, in me. I'm natural. I've got a bunch of brothers. We rip each other right and left, but we do it with this underground, you know, kind of connection, affection for each other. And that's what I think has happened with John and me. John, and the thing is, to be honest, and I know we're not pulling back the curtain too far, because everyone who listens to the show can tell when that curtain is pulled back. There are times when John and I would really like to punch each other in the throat, but that's not most of the time.
You know,
and
I'm so glad there's these great plexiglass dividers between the two of you. That's workplace violence. I don't know if the management was listening.
Rhetorically.
You know, you and I mentioned it earlier, and you know, one of the things I love about Dory Monson, for instance, is. And I always tell people this about Dory, is he's just the nicest guy. You know, he has these strong opinions and everybody has an opinion of him. But if you meet him face to face, he just wants to talk about his daughters and all these things. And, you know, for when I think about you, I think about you in the same way. And I think it's a dying breed of human who is able to just really be so kind to everyone. You did something for me when I was really young. I think I was like 22. I had been here a year. And I was going through a challenging time because I was just getting used to just the scores of negative feedback that you get in this job. It's really can be a buzzkill where you're really proud of something, you do something, and then people just hate it. They let you know. And so I came out of the studio one day, and I go over to my desk, which was right behind me at the time, and there's this email that has been printed out on my desk, and it has a handwritten little note from you, and it says, "I just wanted you to know what our viewers think of you, Tom." And it was this really lovely email from a viewer, and at that moment, I needed it so much, and to this day, I still have this email you printed out in kind of a package of things that I kept. And so one of the questions I wanted to ask you, I have trouble at times in this business just making sure that I am patient and kind. Mm-hmm. You know, it's such a fast-paced business. You've been able to maintain that for 27 years. How, Tom? How?
Well, okay. So this, I mean, the thing is these are really rich psychological kinds of issues that we could talk about. There are also social issues. There are all sorts of aspects to this. I think one of the things that helps me in this business, in this argumentative business and this very polarized business, is I love the engagement. And I persist. Now, John always attacks me for being naive. I think I'm idealistic. And I think there is a difference between those two. And it may come off as naive. But I really feel like everybody, and this is what makes me a liberal, I think, at heart, you know, on the political scene. I think most people are doing the best they can at the time.
You think conservatives think everybody's doing the worst they can?
Yes. I think, you listen to John. John thinks that 90% of us, and probably a higher percentage, will do anything we can to cheat. And I persist in that. No, that's. I think most of us are honest, and we don't screw the system. We don't screw each other because we realize it has, you know, impacts. And so, to me, the liberal is always looking at, the way I think of conservatives is they're hard. So if you commit a crime, okay, you're doing the time. We're going to be none of this liberal wishy-washy. Well, consider the circumstances in which that person grew up. There but for the grace of God go I. I think we would be a lot like those people that we disapprove of if we were given the same kind of parameters of their life that, you know, that they have. And that, to me, I think if that's liberal, it doesn't need to be. It's not meant, that wasn't meant to be a put down of conservatives. Conservatives have their own strengths, but I think a liberal is somebody, a liberal do-gooder. That's the dismissal. What is that? I always see the good in people, or I try to see the good in people, even when I'm infuriated by them, even when I think they do terrible things, and I think that helps. I also think somebody, you know, G asked me yesterday, how is it you get along with management? Because I'm a natural, I'm a worker bee. I suspect, you know, management, if we had a union back, I'd be, you know, in favor of the union. I'm a little suspicious of the management, but I tell G, listen, here's how I deal with management. As long as they hear me out, I don't care if they act on what, you know, I say. Their job is to make those decisions. But if they are willing to hear me out, one of the greatest things that I think, Carl Gardner was the first one to do, but Kathy Gangiano's done it too, the top dog here, he invites every one of us into his office one at a time, and you can just talk to him and her about anything you want. And they just sit there and they listen. That is a great contact. You feel listened to. If you're just heard and they say, well, you know, Tom, you make three good points, but say Dory or, you know, anybody else makes four good points and we decide we have to go this way, that way, like, okay, fine. You understood me. I'm passionate about what I think. And if you disagree with me, ultimately, that's cool.
Yeah, and I don't think it's naive. I think that it's, to me, the way I look at that is liberals want to do good for other people. Conservatives want people to do good for themselves. And so I think there's this, like, motivational
yes,
factor.
Which I see as selfish.
Yes.
You know, mean, that's my take on conservatives.
You give a man a fish, you got to teach him to fish.
Yes, I'm happy teaching them to fish. I think that's good.
I am curious why now. You know, we're hearing, and I mean, I quit my job for much different reasons, but we're hearing
that's
a lot
the more interesting story.
No, it's not.
I'm 67 years old. You quitting in the prime of your career.
I said
that's the story.
I didn't quit. I commit.
No. Yeah.
And
that's
I'm
true.
Curious. You know, we are hearing more and more stories about people leaving. I mean, you're ready to go. But what is there? Is there anything nefarious about your departure?
Absolutely not. And that's the disappointing thing for most people that love gossip. You
yes,
know what I mean?
Because
this and that. What's the real, you know, behind the scenes? No, actually, my first love has always been. So I've got two things. First, I'm a real family guy. That's where I think Dory and I have a lot in common. We really are family first types. And I have an aging mother who needs a lot of caregiving, and we've been doing a lot of caregiving. We've moved her into our house for a while. It didn't quite work out, so now we're sort of half living with her because I'm trying to keep her in her home as much as possible. So that's a big commitment. And the thing, I was going to retire a couple of years ago, and they made this nice arrangement for me that I could get Fridays off to be with my mom more, because I realized if I'm working, because I love, if I, okay, this is my problem, is I've got too many reasons why I'm leaving. One of the things is, because of my age, I'm 67. My dad died at 70. I mean, who knows how long I have? And there's so many other millions of things I want to do in this life that I've done 30 years of radio and had a blast. If I knew, Brandy, that I was going to be a healthy 25 more years on this planet, I'd happily work another 5-7 years here. I mean, I am not walking away from this job because I don't love it. I'm walking away from this job because there's other things that I also love. You got the family responsibility. And the thing about the way the mom connection weighs on me is that I don't know how long. In fact, it was a family joke. She's going to outlive me. But I do not want, if she only has a few more years in life, I don't want to feel like, wow, I had great ratings for 3 more years and made a bunch of money. And yeah, that was great. Yeah, it's too bad I didn't really see my mom much. It's not worth it.
It's not
and so this is a compromise.
Yeah, that's good for you. And I think that the pandemic has done that to a lot of folks to really make them and force them to reevaluate. This is good. That's a great lesson for anybody to reevaluate their priorities in life. And, 10 years from now, what's really going to matter to you? Is it time spent with your mother, or is it, the money that you pulled in or the ratings you pulled in for 3 years? So kudos to you for being able to make that decision.
But also, I don't want to downplay the radio stuff. I was saying, so I originally thought I was going to be a college prof. If I had been a college prof for 30 years and then was retiring, giving up my tenure or something, and somebody said, hey, Tom, would you like to do a radio job? How about a radio talk show? I go, heck yeah, that sounds fun. It's just like something else to do. That's where I am. It's a great place to be. Although, as I look at you two young things, as happy as I am right now, I would trade in a second to be your age. I know it's not easy being your age, but it's like you've got twice as much life ahead of you, probably, I mean, statistically, than I do. And that's what I love the most is life.
In this
how
time,
old do you
even?
Think we are? Please, Tom, let's end with that. How old do you think we are?
Well, I think I know for a fact. You were 21, you said, when we first met.
Gosh,
and you've
I'm
been
kidding. I'm kidding. Let's end with this, Tom. You guys are going to have a show, your final show.
4 hours. We're doing all 4 hours, everybody. Now, there's the headline.
What can listeners expect?
Well, we'll hear a lot from listeners. That's part of what we're going to expect. We sent out a thing. If anyone wants to write. One of the things, and I think this is true probably with every talk show, but John and I are convinced that we have the best listeners, the smartest, the funniest, most articulate listeners, the way they write in and all this.
I mean, they stay on from noon to 7.
Don't listen to Dory Monson listeners. He doesn't mean it. He doesn't mean it.
No, they just go into that
thing
show.
to be fair, Nicole, it used to be they started at 9 and bled into up to 3.
It's true. I'm not saying. I'm just saying they stick around.
No. I know. They're great. And the thing is that we end each show, like a lot of shows now do, we end each show reading listener emails. And it's like John and I spend 3 hours of a 4-hour show trying to come up with, interesting ways to go back and forth. And then a listener just nails it. He says, okay, it's just the right, like in these 7 words, he summarizes 3 hours of us talking back and forth. They're funny, they're witty, and all that. So we're going to kind of introduce the show, open up. We're bringing in Felix Bonnell. I don't know if you've heard of him. He's a local historian, and he's going to do a history of the Tom and Curly Show. That'll be a segment. We're going to bring back some faces. So we've been the Tom and Curly Show has been a show for like a little over 8 years, and we've had 3 producers in that time. And so each of them had their mark. We're going to hear from each of the 3 producers, talk about their perspective, talk about from the reporters. I really am curious about poor Hannah, by the way. I guess she hurt her hand or something, but she's going to be on our show. And she's going to talk about how different it is to prep for an appearance on the Tom and Curly Show than any other show. Because John go back and forth. She holds her own. And I mean, it's really entertaining. And Chris is going to come on because, Chris can't stay away from a mic. He's just a bundle of energy. John has some big surprise for me in the last hour. I don't know what is.
No, you do. I'm worried about John. I'm worried about John without you and what that John will look like.
I think Dory said this before, but it's a flawed concept, taking two people that don't agree and having them argue for three or four hours a day. Like, it's a flawed concept, and you don't think that's going to be so listenable. And I honestly don't think it'll come back. So I think this is really the end of an era, because I'm not sure that this can be recreated. And the reason that it works is because you're both so dang lovable.
Yeah.
And so regardless of you agree with either person, you love and appreciate their opinions.
I see Brandy looking at the clock, and I know we gotta go.
Well, we're good.
I just want to say is that, yes, we argue, but if you look at the 3 hours, we argue about 20 minutes of that 3 hours.
Oh, for sure.
And then for 2 hours and 40 minutes, we're just, trade. I mean, the thing is, we have a lot of there is a kind of knock. We're old white guys. I get that. But we have a lot of lived experience. And so the fact that John and I, as polar opposites, can spend an entire segment talking about musical theater and Stephen Sondheim or doing poetry readings or something, it's like, that's hilarious to me. And the fact I know his kids and they know me, it's like, it is an amazing experience to be in the kind of situation I'm in. And I am really mourning the loss of Tom and Curly, not for my sake, but I think it's a perfect model. I think 75% of the Tom and Curly Show is the best stuff that's ever been on Cairo Radio. The other 25%, it might be the worst.
Because politics is only a piece of everyone.
Exactly.
And so what's happening is that you guys are agreeing on the basic family values. You guys get along regardless of what you believe about politics.
And that's hard to think right now, because politics dominates our worldview.
Well, I think that's what – let me end with this, actually. I said, I'll have five more questions. One thing I'm really passionate about, and it's one of the reasons I left my job, is I'm passionate about trying to get back to a point where we can have civil dialogue with each other based on facts and reason and be able to be productive. And you are, in a lot of ways, forced to try to do that, at least talk to somebody you don't agree with, every single day.
Absolutely.
So what would your advice be to listeners who are struggling maybe in their personal lives to engage in a productive way with people they don't agree with?
Okay, so one of the great things about this job for the last 8 years, I mean, Jacob has given us so much to read. I feel like I've read more than I did in graduate school in terms of the stuff you have to go through. And there was this great article and analysis. I can't even remember, where it came from. But they talked about the value. I think it's called A Good Scrap. That might be the title of it. The value of an argument. And they said the value of an argument is even, and this is why John and I think work, because John's always wrong and I'm always right. But they said even when you're making a wrong argument, you are helping to clarify to people what the truth is. And so if John, I say that jokingly, John thinks I'm, wrong all the time. But the fact that I'm forced to deal with his wrongness and he's forced to deal with my wrongness shades our opinions. And that's the best thing. I was out with my mom, actually, and my wife at Chocolati's up on Greenwood. And we're just having our hot chocolate and stuff. But my voice tends to carry and people recognize my voice if you ever listen to Cairo. And this, middle-aged guy just was, sort of over on his computer. And at the end, he just said, "Hey, I love your show." And I went over and I says, "Really? The kind of person that hangs out in a coffee shop is not the kind of person I imagine listening to Tom and Curly Show. I love meeting our audience." And one of the things I said, "So what is it that you like about it and stuff?" And I think given the fact that he was hanging out in a coffee shop in Greenwood, my hunch is his politics lean more my way than John's. That comes and goes. But he says, and that's why I use that word. He finds our show very clarifying. It really helps him to hear both sides of an issue or five sides of an issue and then kind of fashion, some kind of his own personal truth in the midst of it.
It can really help solidify your personal beliefs. Tom Tangney leaving Cairo Radio after 27 years, the final show today. So don't go away after the Dory Monson show.
Stay tuned. Especially not today.
You are a role model for so many, and congratulations to you on a wonderful career. And that is The Big Lead. Repeats itself, try and you succeed. Never doubt that you're the one, and you can have your dream. You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the best around. And nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the to say, and down the stretch we come. Am I? Is that too early?
A little too early.
Oh, okay. Sorry, Dory.
Two more seconds.
This is Brandi Caruso filling in for my friend Dory Monson, who's a little under the weather today. Hopefully he's feeling better soon. I guess we were done with Nicole Thomas Kennedy. She doesn't like me very much. Start with that. You know, when I through the election, Nicole Thomas Kennedy, of course, the police abolitionist who ran and lost for the race for Seattle City Attorney, you know, leading up to the election, I was still in my political correspondent role at Fox 13 in Seattle. And man, there were a lot of things that I wanted to say about Nicole Thomas Kennedy and her campaign that I kind of had to scale back a little bit. And so when I launched my own digital show, I kind of did some segments that I'd been holding in about Nicole Thomas Kennedy and sort of the fact that she almost won, which I found to be absolutely terrifying given some of her past statements about the police, celebrating criminals, and vilifying the police. And so she was on Twitter the other day saying, well, basically, why are you so obsessed with me still? It's like the election's only a few weeks behind us. Give me a little more time to talk about how dangerous your stance on things was. You know, Nicole Thomas Kennedy seems to have, though, an interest in talking to one of our hosts here, the host of Cairo Nights, Jack Stein, has now done, I believe, two interviews with her. And she did her first post-election interview with him. And Jack Stein joins us live on the Dory Monson Show. Jack, thanks for being here.
Sure, Randy. How are you?
Well, you know, I heard that Nicole, you know, wanted you to fill in and you couldn't make it work today. So I got a desperate call from Nicole, like I've asked everyone else. So thank you very much for putting this wrinkle in my afternoon.
You're very welcome.
So why does Nicole like to do interviews with you? Is there a story there?
Sure. Yeah. So I like to refer to Nicole as NTK affectionately. But so I reached out to Nicole right when the election was starting to really heat it up. I think it might have been 2 or 3 weeks in advance. And I said, hey, do you want to come on the show? We talk about your tweets and, we'll have a good time. And she said, sure, absolutely. And you can go back and you can listen to that interview. And we go full horns out. We go full debate mode. And we go kind of tit for tat for 18 minutes. And then afterwards, like a good broadcaster that I am, I sent her a thank you email. I just said, hey, thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it. And honestly, I got the sense from NTK that she cared very much about the city. Now, we care about it in different ways and we have different policy prescriptions. But I got the feeling, I got the sense that she cared very much about the community, and I wanted to express that to her. I wanted to make a connection. I'm getting really tired of the gotcha optic win with no follow-up. So I said, thanks for coming on. I really got that sense from you, and I really appreciate it. And then NTK responds and says, well, thank you very much, and I got the sense, the same thing from you, and thank you for giving me the forum. And then we get really chummy via email. And so I said, hey, after she lost, I said, hey, you want to come on the show? And it won't be a gotcha interview. I'm not going to do any of this. I'll give you all the questions in advance. I'll let you know exactly what we're going to talk about. And we'll do exactly that. And we'll just have a friendly conversation instead of a debate with the optic win where I own the libs with facts and logic. I was like, let's just talk.
Sure.
And that's how that happened.
Sure. Yeah. And I listened to the first interview and I thought it was, you know, it was a debate, but it was respectful. And you shared with her some of your personal experiences that I thought helped to soften the questions a little bit. So you get Nicole Thomas Kennedy. She's been a little salty on Twitter after her loss. I will say she kind of went back to her old Twitter ways a little bit. So I was interested to hear what she would say. So she talked a lot about how hard the campaign was on her and on her family. In fact, she compared it to childbirth. Listen.
I gave childbirth naturally, which is something I don't recommend for people. And they told me like, oh, after a while, you'll forget about how awful it was. And that's why people do it again. And I said, well, I'm going to write it down so I don't forget. And so I did the same thing with this campaign. I'm like, I know in the future I'll think like, oh, it wasn't that bad, but I'm going to write it down.
But she also talked about the fact that she started, as this race gained national attention, she started to get death threats not only against her, but against her daughter.
I can shake it off pretty easily. But I think it was like when it came to my family, those were things that were really devastating to hear people wish death on my child, that was really devastating. And initially I didn't even really want to talk about it because I didn't want it out in the world that was something that happened, because it's just so ugly and awful.
So Jack, this is where I have a hard time. And look, I think we should all agree, no one should be sending death threats to anyone, especially not a child. That is incredibly wrong and sad and horrifying. And I don't want to say but, because I don't want it to be a but. That's a statement that's just going to stand on its own. It's going to stand on its own. Don't do that.
Yeah.
You know, Nicole has said some horrible things about people. You know, calling police serial killers, which could incite violence against police officers. She has celebrated violence. And, you know, she posted a picture of her own daughter holding up a little post-it that said BLM FSPD, you know, putting her daughter in this weird situation where she's, you know, indoctrinating her to hate the police. And so I guess I have a hard time sitting there feeling bad for Nicole Thomas Kennedy. Am I wrong to feel that way?
Yeah, I think so.
Tell me why I should have definitely empathy for her daughter. That goes without saying.
Sure.
You know, she shouldn't be brought, one, into a, you know, hating on police scenario and have her face blasted all over the internet like that. I'm not her mother, but I wouldn't have done it. And then two, you know, so the daughter, that's a totally different subject. Kids are 100% off limits. But Nicole Thomas Kennedy and her campaign manager, they both said some horrible things. And I guess for her to come back on the back end and say, woe is me, I'm struggling to identify with that.
Well, I'm not a leftist, so I don't think that speech is violence. I just don't think that you can equate speech to violence. And if you want to do this thing and you say, well, you know, with NTK, she said some really egregious things. I think at one point in time she said that she hoped unvaccinated police officers would get COVID and die, I think, if I'm not misquoting.
And eat some COVID-laced blank.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. But how can I, as a broadcaster, meet that and try to convince that person that empathy and kindness is a good thing if I don't initially have empathy for them to begin with? Like, I'm not going to excuse it. You heard the first interview. I mean, we went toe-to-toe over that for 18 minutes. But at the same time, I have this new philosophy, which is I am so tired of the outrage of it all that if I can try to walk somebody back from these extreme positions by showing them in the same way that we might show a child that empathy and kindness is the way to go, and that this heightened rhetoric, whether it's on Twitter or on a radio show or wherever it is, if we can all dial it back about 100 notches, maybe then we could find common ground. And so, yes, I will feel bad for NTK getting death threats in the same way that I feel bad for any police officer who gets mean tweets from NTK.
Do you believe in that same vein, though, and in that same spirit that you're trying to foster? Did you get the sense that Nicole Thomas Kennedy has come around in that way, having gone through such a hateful period of time and having subjected other people to hate? Do you feel like she's starting to realize in the same way that you're trying to treat her that, look, I didn't like it when it happened to me, and I can understand that other people didn't like it when I directed it at them?
Yeah, maybe. I think that I can't speak for NTK, but I will say that a lot of NTK's vitriol is largely towards systems of perceived oppression, right? And they're towards systems of perceived injustice. And so I find that to be there's a far cry between celebrating the attempted arson of a juvenile detention center and then someone actually telling NTK that they're going to, you know, show up at her house and shoot her and so on and so forth, right? I mean, these are two totally different sets of threats and two different themes of violence.
They're both wrong, and I think they both perpetrate each other and lead to this just really, you know, spiraling of our national discourse. And, you know, the reality is she was a political candidate. She put herself out there in a way where she should have realized that things she'd said in the not-so-distant past were going to come back on the campaign trail. And I really found her to act as if, woe is me for people bringing these things back up. I felt that she felt really surprised by the fact that her tweets got as much attention as they did.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And I thought,
yeah,
did you not have anyone telling you that these tweets were bad? Well, Jack, we're out of time here, but good for you on these two interviews. I found them to be really informative. Dang you for not filling in for Dory today. No, I've had a good time.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I appreciate you at least making time to come talk to us about this interview. Thank you, sir.
Anytime, Brandy.
All right, coming up. Can I do Down the Stretch We Come yet, Nicole?
Right after this break.
Oh, okay. Right after this break, we're going to have Dory's awesome audio clips of the day. Stretch we come. What a day, what a show, what a show, what a day. Is that it?
That's totally it,
Brandy. Oh my gosh, you can tell I'm a Dory Monson fangirl. Brandy Crew's filling in for my friend Dory Monson. He's a little under the weather today, but it's been fun, Nicole. Thanks for having me on. It was a surprise. Yeah, it was a surprise to me.
You want to do this again?
Maybe someday.
I don't allow Dory to take too much vacation, but
maybe
occasionally.
Maybe someday. It's been really fun. So, you know, I can't say no to you guys. Let's get to the awesome audio clips of the day.
This is Dory Monson's awesome audio clips of the day.
And we've got some good ones today. A couple of them having to do with politicians who have no sense of self-awareness whatsoever. Pete Buttigieg, the transportation secretary, of course, former presidential candidate, someone who I liked an awful lot when he was on the campaign trail because of his uber heightened intelligence and public speaking capabilities, had a not so great moment when he was talking to The Hill about the nation's gas prices, offering up a simple solution for Americans who are concerned about the costs at the pump.
But there is more envisioned in the Build Back Better law. I'll give you one example. It contains incentives to make it more affordable to buy an electric vehicle, up to a $12,500 discount, in effect, for families thinking about getting an EV. Families that, once they own that electric vehicle, will never have to worry about gas prices again.
Ah, yes, Pete Buttigieg in his Rust Belt bubble, talking about the fact that if Americans are concerned about gas prices, just go buy a new car. Go buy an electric car. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about the upfront costs. I'm sure if you're having trouble paying for gasoline, you will have no trouble whatsoever buying a new vehicle. All right, number two in our awesome audio clips of the day is my favorite body camera footage I've ever seen in my career. It's so awkward. So, of course, you guys know the story about the MSNBC stringer who was trailing the bus full of jurors as they left the courthouse in the Kyle Rittenhouse trial. And apparently this freelancer was trying to see where they lived, maybe, or get some information that could help NBC and MSNBC track them down after the trial so they could ask them if they wanted to do an interview, which is a bizarre practice, but apparently this is pretty normal in cable news. So we now have the body camera footage of the officer in Kenosha, Wisconsin, pulling over this poor, poor freelancer who's just doing what he's told. And the freelancer puts the officer on speakerphone with Irene, the producer in New York, and the officer proceeds to ask her what the heck was going on.
Hi, officer. My name is Irene. I'm a booking producer with NBC News.
Uh-huh.
We were just trying to respectfully, just trying to see if it's possible to find any leads about the case, and so we were just keeping our distance, just to see like where people involved in the trial are positioned. By no means were we trying to get in contact with any of the jury members or whoever's in the car.
She should be a politician. The way that she tried to spin that, we're trying to see where people involved in the case are positioned. You mean where they live, Irene? Oh, she was just squirming, and that officer was not having any of it. That has got to be one of the best clips I've ever heard from a police body. And it's not tragic. You know, usually police body camera footage is kind of sad and tragic, and this was not. It was highly entertaining. Poor Irene at MSNBC in New York. All right, and time for our top awesome audio clip of the day comes from Mr. President of the United States, who, in ensuring children that they will indeed have the toys they want for Christmas, blamed any absence of those toys not on supply chain issues, but on Santa Claus.
Now, I can't promise that every person will get every gift they want on time. Only Santa Claus can keep that promise. But there are items every year that sell out that are hard to find. some of you moms and dads may remember Cabbage Patch Kids back in the 80s or Beanie Babies in the 90s or other toys that have run out at Christmas time in past years when there was no supply chain problem. But we're heading into a holiday season in very strong shape.
So parents, if you don't want to get your kids what they're asking for, just either blame it on Biden, the supply chain, or do what Biden did and blame it on Santa Claus. It has been a pleasure filling in for my friend Dory Monson today. I don't know if he'll be back tomorrow, Nicole, but I wish you all a wonderful week nonetheless.
I don't believe it. They've managed the impossible. What an achievement. Bravo, bravo.
What? You mean you actually like this show now?
No, they've made the show even worse.
Oh.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. You're really a fantastic audience.